Let's remember together some of the greatest TV and movie stars of yesteryear with the woman who knew them. Mary Jane Popp hosted radio and TV shows for nearly 5 decades, meeting these stars and getting them to share their real-life stories. You'll meet them up close and personal as Mary Jane searches her extensive archives for the best and brightest real star talk on Pop Star Talk. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp!
Time once again for a celebrity journey into yesteryear on Pop Star Talk. I got a dynamic duo for you. They both have done TV and movies, and their credits and reputations precede them. Now, they are history in the entertainment world. And joining me, as always, is my producer, Kenneth Segura-Noel. And also joining us once again is syndicated radio film critic and historian, Matthias Bambal of MAB Hollywood. So, gentlemen, are you ready to go back in time with a he and she that will bring back so many memories? I don't know if I want to give it away. Maybe we'll just go to the interview and then we'll come back and talk. Is that okay, Matthias and Ken?
That's
yes?
Okay.
Okay. So let's get to it. Those of you who are TV fans, you just might recognize this theme.
There's a magic in the early morning we found. When the sunrise smiles on everything around. It's a portrait of the happiness that we feel and always will. Oh, it is enough to fill our lives with.
Doesn't that bring back beautiful, beautiful memories? Well, let me give you some more memories. Over 600 radio shows, 27 Broadway plays, 24 feature films, 7 television series. Sounds pretty impressive, huh? But what if I told you these credits belong to one man? Now, perhaps you got to know him as a neighbor when he was Tom Bradford in the long-running hit TV program called Eight is Enough. But it hasn't been or ever will be enough, not for Dick Van Patten. He's still going strong with Eight is Enough reunions and weddings and so much more. He's got a movie. We're going to talk about that. Dick has always been on stage and always will be. And his star on Hollywood Walk of Fame shines on. Dick, what a pleasure to have you with us on Pop Off.
Oh, thank you very much. It's my pleasure, too.
Is it true that you're working on a movie now?
No, I'm not working on a movie now. I was in a play, The Sunshine Boys. I was all over the country.
Oh, how cool.
On touring with that, yeah.
Oh, listen, it is so, and by the way, just to let everybody know, and the reason I'm going to even mention this is just to know that there is always hope and there's always, you follow up. You did have a stroke last year, correct?
Yes, it was over a year and a half ago. It was January of last, not this year, the January before last year.
2006. And you're doing great.
Oh, yeah, it hasn't affected me now, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Now, you've been working since you were 7 years old, a tender age of 7.
Yeah, I worked. My first Broadway play was 1936.
Wow.
It was called Tapestry in Gray. I played Melvin Douglas' son.
My.
You remember Melvin Douglas?
Yeah.
I was his son. I was 7 years old. And I did 27 plays on Broadway. So I've really been very lucky.
Now, you've worked with so many greats, all the way from Tallulah Bankhead to Henry Fonda. Was there any favorite in your life that just stands out and says, boy, what an experience to work with certain people?
Yes, there was. I was in a play. I was in it for 4 years, 2 years on Broadway and 2 years on the road with Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne, the Lunts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were the best I ever worked with, I think, anyway.
Is it because they came from the old vaudeville era, didn't they?
Well, no, actually, Lynn Fontanne was born in London.
Oh, okay.
And Alfred Lund was born in Milwaukee. Yeah, they were great, the Lunds, you know. And I played their son, and it was a great experience.
Well, I think people who have stage experience bring a special something to the screen, don't you?
Well, I hope so. It helped me a lot. I know it was like going to school. It was wonderful.
What is you must have a wonderful philosophy of life that keeps you going. What's your philosophy?
Well, my philosophy if you enjoy what you're doing, you know, if you enjoy work, it could be nothing better. I also, my family is very important to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my family comes first, even before work. If everything is okay at home, then nothing worries me.
Excellent. Well, your wife, Pat, wasn't she a June Taylor dancer?
Yes, my wife was a June Taylor dancer on the Gleason Show when we got married. She was on that, you know. She was also a rockette in Radio City Music Hall, and she was in a lot of plays on Broadway. She was a real working dancer. So I stopped that when we got married and had three kids right away.
Wow.
You got to give all that up.
Now, that's Nels, James, and Vincent, right?
Yes, very good.
Yeah, what are
Nels
they doing?
Nels is the oldest. I was doing a TV show called I Remember Mama,
uh-huh.
And I played the part of Nels. So when he was born, I figured I'll name him that. You know, it was lucky for me. I'll give him that name.
Uh-huh.
And then there's Nels, and then there's Jimmy, and then the youngest, they're all a year apart, is Vincent. And he does that show now, the World Poker Tour. He's the commentator on that. It's a very popular show.
Oh, yeah.
Every Wednesday or Saturday night.
Now, what do you think about today's movies? Some of the movies that are coming out, it amazes me that they're that popular.
Well, here's what I think. I think the greatest movies were made in the 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And they had more plots, more stories, more twists. I think they've lost the art of making movies a little. I think the movies were better then.
Although I
have seen a few good movies. But nothing like in the 30s and 40s. Do you agree with me?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I stay up till 3, 4 in the morning watching the Turner Network because you were right. They had plots.
Yes.
The black and white, the shadowing of it. It doesn't have to be color. It just mesmerizes you.
Black and white is fascinating.
Yeah, I hate it when they colorize something because it takes it away.
It really does, yeah. But movies like Double Indemnity and now Voyager, And pictures of, oh, they were so good, and the Postman Always Rings Twice. They were some of the best movies I ever saw.
Oh, it held. It was spellbinding is what it was.
Yeah, it really was.
Do you have any favorite actors today?
Oh, today?
Yeah. Oh,
that's a good question. Actress? She's not really a movie actress, but I think Clara C. Leachman is a wonderful actress. You know who I mean?
Oh, you bet I do. She can do anything.
She's one of the best around today, and I think that Al Pacino is a terrific actor.
Oh, yeah.
Very good, yeah.
To me, a good actor is when you lose sight of who they are.
Yep.
You don't know them anymore.
The character, right?
Yeah, and that to me is great. It's not I'm taking away from people like John Wayne and everything. But John Wayne as a cowboy or John Wayne as a military, it was still John Wayne.
That's true. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was so strong in real life. It was hard to visualize him as something else. Mm-hmm.
Now, what's next on the agenda for Dick Van Patten? By the way.
Oh, well, my life is full of surprises. I never know quite what I'm going to do next. You know, the phone rings and they tell me to go here, you know, different places. But I'm doing, I don't really know what I'm going to do next. You know, it depends on whatever the phone says.
Well, can I keep touch with you so we can figure it out every time?
Oh, sure, that'll be fun.
Now, the other thing, too, is I want everybody to know that I'm using your Natural Balance, your dog food.
Oh, very good. I'm so glad to hear that.
This pet food recall is scary, Dick.
Yeah, I feel bad about that. Those foods that were recalled, they made them in China, I think, and out of the country. We make our own food in Pacoima, California here, so we were very lucky that ours was now recalled. I feel badly for those people that lost their pets and everything, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I had a Doc Halligan on. She is a veterinarian, but she was also after Katrina in New Orleans and helping down there.
Oh,
and
yes.
Yours, she said, Natural Balance. I said, well, that's Dick Van Patten's company. She says, yes, absolutely. It is safe. It's really wonderful food. So I wanted everybody to know it's available. I'm feeding my dog Dick Van Patten's food.
What kind of a dog do you have?
Well, I had a Springer Spaniel who passed away recently, but I still have my Encore. His name is Yukon's Standing Ovation, and we call him Encore for short. He's a Samoyed.
Oh, yeah, they're very smart.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about this one. I think he was in the line for white, not bright. Now, if you could tell me, Dick Van Patten, I know this is a hard thing to do. Step outside of yourself and look back at Dick Van Patten, and in as few words as you can, tell me who he is.
Well, he's somebody that work comes is very important. I think it's good to be working all the time, and I'm very happy that I was a child actor. A lot of people frown on child actors, but it was a wonderful experience. I was very lucky, and I think kids that are acting when they're kids have a great advantage. They learn discipline, and it's really good. I think I'm a child actor that just grew up and kept working.
I love it. Dick, please, would you come back and visit with us again?
I'd love to.
You're terrific, and have a wonderful day. Stay well, and give my love to Pat.
It was wonderful talking to you again.
Take care now.
Bye now.
It's the greats who go on Pop Off.
You know, Dick is no longer with us, but he really has left a legacy that will remain forever. Don't you agree, Matthias?
Absolutely. And what's interesting about him, for me personally, is the fact that he really worked in every single show business medium. He started as a child actor. He was on Broadway with London Fontaine. And I know that another child star at that same time was Montgomery Clift, and they were both friends. And that when he got to work with London Fontaine and Clift didn't, Clift had come out to California from New York, he immediately wrote Dick and said, "Oh my gosh, I think it's great you got that part with London Fontaine on Broadway. I used to watch them all the time. I learned everything I know from London Fontaine." Kind of an interesting thing that happened. So it's a very early experience for Broadway. And he did have a show business mother. And for both he and his sister, the mother was, because both were acting, was always pounding the pavement in New York and Broadway to do it. But she wasn't one of these horrible type of stage moms are the horror thing. No, she instinctively knew that Dick and his sister were truly interested and wanted to try it. And his father actually would say, "Well, this is great for you at this time in your life, but just enjoy it as much as you can and work as hard as you can to do the best you can, because you don't know how long it's going to last." But for Dick, it lasted a long time. You know, after Broadway, there was radio. I think he went into radio in about 1948. And during that time, he was on shows like I Remember Mama, which was the radio version of the famous movie of I Remember Mama, which had starred Irene Dunne, and he was on radio. But right that time at NBC in 1948, they were just switching to television. So he had done it for a few months and then went right into TV with I Remember Mama. So he had radio, he had television, he had Broadway, and then he had a movie career after that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he worked in every medium there is, on the stage, screen, radio, television, the way they used to say in those variety ads. So I think about some of his movies, like The Snowball Express, that was way back in 1972. He was even in that cult classic, Soylent Green, as one of the ushers.
I didn't know that.
I won't tell you what Soylent Green is, but you'll find out by the end of the movie.
I remember that. That gave me nightmares.
And because he had a tennis court at his house, he managed to become friends with Mel Brooks, who would bring over Gene Wilder and Alan Alda, and they'd all play tennis together, and they would sit there playing tennis. And then finally Mel said, "You know, I think I can use you." He was going to put him into a TV show, Something Rotten. I can't remember the exact title of it. It lasted only five months on the television, and then they canceled it. Mel Brooks hated it, but he was Dick Van Patten's part was that of a Friar Tuck way back in history in the Robin Hood days. So when Mel Brooks made Robin Hood Men in Tights, he brought Dick back for that, where he had a couple of roles. He actually ended up making four movies with Mel Brooks: High Anxiety, Spaceballs, he's in that, of course, the Robin Hood picture. But he was also in a couple of Disney movies that nobody remembers today. Maybe somebody remembers. These were in a period in the 70s when Disney was making a lot of family stuff, but it was after Disney had died, and they started making movies like Island at the Top of the World, which was very formative for me as a kid. But the one I remember Dick in was Gus. Gus was the story of this mule that played football, and the kid would yell, "Oy it!" And then the mule would kick the goal, the kid right over the goalpost. Dick was really fun in that. So, I mean, he had a very wonderful connection to being able to communicate. And yet he wasn't a big star. He was always, a really great influence. And that's certainly true of the people he was with on Eight Is Enough. When he passed away, I remember that some of those cast members, those young kids, felt that he made the kids feel like they were really having the best time of their life at that moment, and told them to remember it as these are the good old days. And I thought that was a really inspiring and wonderful thing for Dick to tell a young actor, as he himself had been encouraged by some of the greats of Broadway and the movies. I mean, imagine working, playing Melvin Douglas's son, as he's just told us in your interview, who was such a great actor. Melvin Douglas started with Greta Garbo in silent movies, and then was making movies as late as Hotel in the 70s, you know, which was a wonderful picture. So here is an example of a person that learned from the greats and then was so generous with his time with young actors. And I thought, because of his time as a child actor, he knew how tough that could be. So many kid actors just don't make it. They get down the wrong path. Or it's a lot of attention when you're young and then everything falls apart. Like Tommy Redding, for example, who was wonderful as the kid in Lassie and in the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T. He later became a computer programmer and had suffered depression and horrible problems later in life. So it showed that he had a good head on his shoulders, and he was a generous person. And I think those are traits that we learn from our parents, you know, to lead with kindness. And it's not a characteristic that you often find in the theater business, because in the theater business or on the stage, it's all ruthless. About me. It's all about how great I am. The ego just goes through the roof. Here was a guy without ego. I also, of course, have a particular joy in connecting to the TV show Eight Is Enough, because having grown up in Sacramento when that was on the air, it was fun to see a show that was based in Sacramento. The opening credits had the state capitol, and they had the newspaper offices, and it was a nice little land park neighborhood, a very Tony neighborhood in Sacramento, where they lived, where they shot the exteriors. And of course, the interiors are down in Hollywood. So it's interesting to think of. We may not think of him as a great star, and maybe you think of him in character roles, but he's had a longevity and a career of always working, and few people get that.
Absolutely. What did you think about him saying that he loved the movies from the 30s and 40s? I love the black and white movies, because I don't know, there was something special about black and white movies, don't you think?
Well, I found it very interesting to learn that you stay up till 3 and 4 in the morning to watch these on Turner Classic.
Now, wait a minute.
I'm right there with you.
Well, here's the reason. I started out in the business being an actress myself and singing. And I would do late night singing. Then I went into television, which late night news. You don't get home till like 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, you don't feel like just going to sleep, for heaven's sake. You got to wind down. So I'm a late night person. I hate getting up early in the morning. Whenever Ken asks me to do something and I got to get up at 5 or 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, I go, are you kidding? You know, out of your mind. But black and white movies, the shadowing, the grays, the different shades of black and white. It was just, I don't know. It always drew me in. And I loved the old movies because they had plots. And you got involved in those plots. It wasn't only just blowing up everything, you know, or screaming at each other. No, you got interested. You wanted to find out what was going to happen. Right, Matthias?
Absolutely. And I think the major difference in movie today versus movies in the past is that the stories were so well established that you have to have a good story or people aren't going to be engaged. The characters have to be interesting or they're going to check out. And they say, what the heck? There's no point in watching this. Movies in that era, the 30s and 40s, had a story arc. It was a long story. It was not, as often things are today, situational. Today, a movie is, I've got to be married by 6 o'clock and the crazy stuff we have to do before it's 6 o'clock. You know, so it's a very situational thing, almost like a sitcom. But, you know, you look at some great movies and they cover the entire life of a person or the adventures of a person or a detective movie like the wonderful Nick and Nora Charles films with Myrna Loy and William Powell, where these were characters that we loved over 5 different movies that were charming, but they were beautifully lit. They were beautifully photographed. They had the best people in the world making their costumes. They had the best photographers behind those cameras who knew how to light a scene, because the cinematographer really lights the scene. The camera operator is the guy that actually runs the camera. And they painted with light. And so you're absolutely right, Mary Jane. The look, the feel, the substance of films from the classic era, many of which were instrumental in the development of Dick Van Patten's career, not only working with these luminaries in person on stage, but having the influence of that, I think he had no choice but to follow in those footsteps.
Absolutely. And Ken, don't you love it? Almost everybody that I talk to loves their dogs. You know, you and I are very much into that. And I've got to find out, I don't know if his dog food that he had on the market is still out there.
Yes, it is. I actually saw a commercial for it not too long ago. But it was interesting him talking about Mel Brooks, and he's in the two films, or three films with on Mel Brooks. But, you know, we were playing tennis and we're hanging together, and the directors and the actors and all that. I often wonder, does that still happen in Hollywood? Or is everybody go home to their 15 acres of gated community and hope that it doesn't burn down? But, you know, it always amazed me, the Mel Brooks era of directors and just, you know, Carl Reiners and the Dick Van Pattens and all these guys just hanging together and then going off to work and making, you know, let's make a movie about, you know, Robin Hood or let's make Spaceballs. Now, those conversations I would have liked to have been around as a filmmaker, because how do these come together? You know, you need a good script, you know, but there's always that development stage, as I call it, where what are we going to do? Let's do this. Let's do that. Well, let's do Robin Hood, and we'll call him Men in Tights and make and the Mel Brooks touch to it. And I'm sure Dick Van Patten had input on the scripts, you know. So that's what amazes me about, these people. Of course, Matthias hit it pretty much on the head on Eight Is Enough, because it was set in Sacramento. And I remember going out and shooting a lot of footage of Sacramento that we would put out there. That anybody want to use this as a cover shot? I don't know if one was ever used for Eight Is Enough, but there was a couple of directors there in Sacramento that we would go out and film different parts of Sacramento.
It seemed you hit the nail on the head. When they worked together, it was family and friends, and they all had a stake in it. You know what I mean? They all wanted it to be good, so they listened to each other. You know, they didn't go, I just got to do my lines and get the heck out of here. No, they really cared about the project, like you do. Seriously.
Thank you.
I know, because I've done some of your projects, and you really did care. And boy, you would not accept second best. That's the way you always have been, and I appreciate that.
You know, you just hire the best, and you get second best.
Yeah. Okay, coming up next is a woman for all ages, and ageless, I might add, a beauty with an attitude that never quits.
She's an extraordinary woman of many talents, award-winning actress, best-selling author, with the admiration of millions of fans worldwide. And her life, it reads like a Hollywood movie, from career to personal life. But one thing remains constant. Joan Collins is the ageless beauty. She knows the insider scoop, and many times she's it. Now her latest blockbuster is out, The Art of Living Well, Looking Good, Feeling Great. And I'm feeling great because you're on Pop Off with us. Joan, nice to have you with us.
Well, nice to have you, Mary Jane. Didn't they name a pair of shoes after you?
I think so, the Mary Janes. And not only that, you don't remember, I know, but back in 91, you were touring with Private Lives.
Yes.
And you were in Sacramento for the Broadway series, and we met. I did a television interview with you.
Oh, right.
Yes. And you were wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'll see if I can still keep it up.
Well, first of all, congratulations on your wonderful relationship with Percy Gibson.
Thank you. Well, marriage. We've been married for over 5 years now.
Yes. I assume everything is happy and copacetic.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
We're
very terrific and together and happy and having a wonderful time.
You know, when you talk in your book, I find it fascinating because you, of all people, we think this woman is so glamorous. She's out there. She's in their face. She does whatever she wants. And you say moderation is the key.
Well, it's absolutely true, Mary Jane. It's true with everything. I mean, it's true with eating. I love food and I love to eat. But I will not eat everything that's given to me on my plate, particularly in restaurants in America or England, because they give you far too much. So I will eat what I want. And I will eat, you know, maybe half the broccoli, half the fish, half the salad, but I won't eat at all. The gym, for example, it's important to exercise, but I won't go to a gym. I won't do an hour and a half of strong bicycle rides and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. But see, that makes good sense. It's perfect sense, but we don't use a lot of common sense. We do extremes. We want a fast fix all the time, and it's glad.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear there are people like you out there saying, don't do that. This is not right.
No, absolutely. And then, of course, in terms of makeup and you know, tips for getting yourself looking as good as possible, I think our skin is the biggest, you know, area of our body, the biggest organ of our body. And it's the one that shows the stresses and strains of age more than anything. So it's extremely important to moisturize your skin. But something that a lot of women and men too forget, particularly women over 55, is that you also need to moisturize your eyes. And,
yes.
Because dry eye is something that a lot of people get, and it's something that I have in the morning. The first thing that I have to do in the morning is I have to put eye drops in my eyes. So I use Systane, which are fantastic for that scratchy, burning, sticky eyes in the morning, and they lubricate your eyes. And I think that a lot of people don't think about moisturizing your eyes and also your hands, because your hands can show your age a lot more than your face, because right. You can protect your face, and women think about protecting their face, but they don't. Now, our ancestors, even in the 50s, women wore gloves when they went out to protect their hands.
Amazing. Joan, you said life's a bitch, so why not be one or act like one sometimes? I love that saying. That is so cool.
Well, you know, men are allowed to get away with being tough and strong and aggressive and assertive, you know, and saying you're fired, and being the boss and being very strong. And women aren't. As soon as a woman asserts herself, as soon as a woman gets aggressive in business or even in life, it's called a bitch. And I think it's very unfair.
You're right.
I've suffered from it all my life because I know my business. And if I go and I do a scene, and I know the scene, whether it's on the stage or whether it's in the movies, and the scene is not being directed properly, or it's not being staged properly, it's not being lit properly, I will speak up and say, because I figure I've been acting since I was 9, I know a lot more than most of those people out there.
That's
and
right.
So people can say, oh my God, she's such a bitch, because I'm being strong, because I'm being asserted, because I'm saying what is right.
You're a good role model.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Mary Jane.
No, if you could pick what you're most proud of that you've done in your life, and something that's been the worst choice of your life, what would those be?
Oh, well, of course, the thing I'm most proud of is my 3 children.
Yay.
So I'm particularly proud of my youngest daughter, Katie, who had a terrible accident when she was 8 in a coma, 7 weeks. And she's out of that now, and she's just wonderful and perfectly fine. And the worst thing, well, to get married at 18. Enough said.
Yeah, I think that explains it right there.
Yeah.
What is your philosophy of life?
Oh, my philosophy of life. I have many. It is really that it's very short. It's not a rehearsal. So get the most out of every day. Every day you must try to do one thing that really pleases you. One thing that you achieve something, even if it's only doing the crossword puzzle, and enjoy what you have, because you are never going to be as young again as you are today, or as good looking.
Well, you know what? You are absolutely beautiful and glamorous right now, this moment. And you're proof that it doesn't make any difference about age. It's what's inside of you and how you portray it.
Exactly. I believe that you're as old as you look. And if you think of yourself in a certain way, and don't come things like arthritis and heart disease and obesity and osteoporosis, all of which are things I think that come, a lot of this stuff comes from not eating properly, not exercising enough, and putting on too much weight. And that is what I talk about in my book, without being judgmental about people who are overweight. I think it's one of the greatest disasters that is happening not only to this country, America, but also to my country in England. We have such obesity, it's terrifying. And that is the cause of many, many, many of the diseases of old age, which can be prevented by just simple, easy things, which is what I talk about in my book.
You betcha. Now, when are we going to see you in Legends with Linda Evans?
We just finished our tour.
Oh, really?
You missed it.
Oh, darn. Well, we're not going to miss the book, though, and The Art of Living Well.
No.
I assume it's available everywhere.
If it's not in the stores, you can get it on
Amazon?
Amazon.com, yeah.
Fantastic. Joan, thank you so much. It's been a delight. It's been a long time since we've talked, but you know what? It was worth the wait.
Thank you, Mary Jane.
You have a lovely day.
Thank you.
That's Joan Collins, The Art of Living Well. Looking good, feeling great. She'll always be our glam queen on Pop Off.
Well, guys, I've got a story for you. When I didn't get into it with her when we were talking on the interview, but when she was here in Sacramento, I actually did a live interview on TV. I was at Channel 31 at the time, and I was doing features. And she was a wonderful, beautiful on, you know, on the air, et cetera. But I got into asking her about, at that time, she wasn't married. She was going through boyfriends, you know, several. And I asked her, you know, about her boyfriend, who she with now and all that. She looked straight at me and said, "This interview is over." And I went, "No, it isn't. We got to keep talking." And she did. I mean, she was joking, but she takes it very seriously as to what she wants to let you know and what she doesn't want to let you know. And Matthias, she's a glam queen, always was a glam queen and will continue to be, don't you think?
Well, she started at a very young age, as we all do, but in a professional way, acting since she was 9. I mean, she was a teenager in the 1951, I think, when she just walked on as a bathing suit competition girl in a movie called Bikini Baby. Now, that's one one remembers. Probably she's glad that's been swept under the carpet. But
yeah.
As her career as a very grim and woman, I mean, in your interview, what's great about it is that you can sense that this was her actual personality. She is in control, everything around her. Now, whether that makes her in the category of a word that isn't used in society outside of a kennel, I don't know. But she knew her stuff. Just, you know, like Garbo and even Marlene Dietrich, they knew where that light had to be, and they would work with the mirror in front of them to make sure that light was hitting them exactly correctly. She knew that her body, her physical form, was her best investment, and she made it great. And, you know, and she, of course, I think the biggest early hit that she made, the one that just really opened the world to realize who is this woman, was Land of the Pharaohs in 1955. So just 5 years after being a bikini model in a bikini movie in England, here she is in one of these sword and sandal epics on the giant screen in Land of the Pharaohs, where she played a princess. And then, of course, the Virgin Queen. And a movie that I really liked that no one seems to remember now is The Girl in the Red Velvet Swing, where she starred opposite Farley Granger, who played Harry K. Thaw, the man that famously murdered Stanford White on the top of the Madison Square Garden roof garden. And that was one of the great scandals of the 1890s, the famous architect Stanford White. And Harry Thaw, played by Farley Granger, playing a slightly demented man who was so in love with the part played by Joan Collins. And then, of course, she went off to the rich man's private penthouse with the red velvet swing in it. And it made Farley Granger's character of Harry K. Thaw lose his mind. It was a very wonderful widescreen 20th Century Fox production. And it was the basis on which the movie Ragtime had a segment and an element made later in 1982. Of course, you may remember that, starring James Cagney and other people with these segments of stories. And of course, there was a Broadway Ragtime show, which was the same thing. But Girl in the Red Velvet Swing was the first movie that really visited that story. And Joan Collins was absolutely great in it. Then, of course, The Opposite Sex came along in 1956, which was another widescreen movie from MGM. And that was a remake of their huge hit, The Women, which had been a Broadway sensation and ran thousands of, well, I think 666 performances. What a strange number. But on Broadway, and then George Cukor had directed the women with all the 135 women with men on their minds, as the poster advertised. And here it is, the 50s after 1939, and they decide to make it again in stereophonic sound and CinemaScope. And so Joan Collins played the part of Crystal Allen, which had been played in the first movie by Joan Crawford. And I think her performance is as just as, if you want to say that word, bitchy as Joan Crawford, and maybe even better. And so she certainly, in the movies anyway, had made a great impression, and she was a great beauty, and she still is a great beauty. I mean, you've seen her recently on television, and she keeps her figure. She's very serious, as she said in your interview, about this great focus on health. And she's still making movies. She just made a movie last year, so good for her.
Good deal. And it's amazing. Oh, by the way, Matthias, first of all, thank you for being with us. But I also want to let people know that you do have a website that they can take a look at and find out what you're up to.
That's right. It's mabhollywood.com. You can find that on your web browser, mabhollywood.com. On Facebook, it's Matthias Bumballs Hollywood, just as you see in the lower third graphic here, or maybe it's not there, but there is a lower third there that says Matthias Bumballs Hollywood. That's how you can find me on Facebook. And every now and then, with the great Mary Jane Popp on this great program, which I'm really thrilled to be part of, this is so exciting to speak in such a relaxed and casual way about the stuff we love and the insights of these fantastic personalities, Mary Jane, that you were able to capture and ask some very adroit questions, because you're unflappable and you keep going no matter what. I mean, when she said this interview is over, I'm sure your heart skipped a beat briefly until you figured out she was kidding a little bit. But at the same time, you find the way to draw out very interesting personal glimpses of these remarkable personalities that many of us only see on the screen, either the tiny one or the big one.
I always tell people, and Ken knows this, you know, everybody knows about what they're doing. You know, the movies they're doing, television they're doing, et cetera. I want to get to know the real person behind that personality. I want to know about your hobbies. I want to know you. I want to get to know you. And Ken understands. I've always been that way, right, Ken?
That's correct. But Mary Jane, did you know that Joan Collins and Marilyn Monroe had a short friendship?
No.
And Marilyn Monroe warned Joan Collins about the men of Hollywood.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I saw it was on a Fox documentary based on Joan Collins's book, and I can't remember what it was, but she talked about. She was at a party, and she said Marilyn was sitting in the corner, looking very sad, and she walked over there, and they started to talk and had a short friendship, and Marilyn Monroe warned her about Hollywood, and as I don't know if Matthias knows, but we had a little venture into Marilyn Monroe's life, didn't we?
Big adventure. Well, the Marilyn, Joe, and Me book that I wrote, and I did a lot. And, you know, June DiMaggio, who was the niece of Joe DiMaggio, told me a lot of stories that she was sad. And Marilyn had dreamed about doing dramatic parts.
Right.
And they wouldn't let her do it because she was there. Sex goddess, and they were making money, the studios. And she, you know, she went through a lot, excuse my language, she went through a lot of hell. She really did, to get to where she was, and then to die so young. I mean, Marilyn Monroe died when she was 36 years old.
Joan Collins talked about how she faced a lot of the same things that Marilyn Monroe, and, you know, thanked Marilyn Monroe for really being there as a sounding board. But yeah.
Joan Collins, though, had another personality. She was strong. You know, she wasn't going to take any of that business at all. That was her. Oh, I have to ask you, Ken, are you a Star Trek fan, Ken?
By any chance?
Sorta?
Yes and no. Okay.
The reason is I remember her, and this was like the original Star Trek with Captain Kirk and Spock, and they went back in time. Matthias is nodding his head. I bet he knows what I'm talking about. They went back in time, and Joan Collins was in charge of a soup kitchen where men would come for shelter and everything, the homeless people. And Captain Kirk fell in love with her. And Spock figured out through his little, you know, making things together that he always was able to do, that he could see the future, and the future that she was going to be hit by a car and die. And Kirk actually tried to stop it, and Spock grabbed him and pulled him back, and he said, "You can't do that because you'll mess up the timeline, you know, and all that." And she was excellent in that series. Matthias, do you remember what I was talking about?
Absolutely,
she was good.
It's one of the better ones. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the episode off the top of my head, but it was a really great one. And it was, you know, they went back, and it was sort of a 20s. Set, which is really paramount when they were shooting it. So let's do something cheap on the lot. Let's make it look like have the writers come up with something that uses the 1920s. We've got the cars and everything. But that aside, her performance was very touching. And her scenes with Shatner may be amongst the best he's ever done. It's a very touching performance where they're stuck there in that 20s world, and he's in love, and Spock has to hold him back from changing the eventual future, because who knows, if she had saved him, then everything would be different and they'd all have pointy ears. Who knows?
Yeah. Not so bad. It was pretty good. I had a crush on Spock years and years ago. I know that sounds silly, but I didn't care about Captain Kirk. I just thought Spock was great. Hey, Ken, what about you?
Did you know that Joan was a girlfriend to Warren Beatty?
No, really?
Yeah, that was in the
How long?
I don't know, but they did have quite a bit of footage of them together. And she was gorgeous, or she still is, but
she always, like you said, she always was in control. Lighting, what was going to be on the screen, photographs and everything. And you could tell that. I mean, even when I did that television interview with her, she told the cameraman where to stand and what to do, and made sure that the lighting was perfect. She wanted to see what it looked like before I finished the interview. I mean, unbelievable. And you know what? So what? It is her life and her career, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed. And I think that, yes, and I just like to briefly mention your Marilyn book is great. I love it. It's one of my treasured books. And I think that's still available, is it not? Where can people find your book about Marilyn and DiMaggio?
Sort of, but Ken, you can tell him we're planning some other things to go with it, right?
Well, on Amazon, there are a lot of people, you know, you can buy used versions of it. Yeah.
But hey, who knows what's next? Let's put it that way.
Well, in order to buy the used version, they need the complete title. So could we have the complete title?
Sure. Marilyn, Joe, and Me. It's that simple. And this is about Marilyn and Joe and their relationship before, during, and even after they were divorced. And June DiMaggio, the niece of Joe DiMaggio, the famous baseball player, she had so many stories with the likes of Carol Channing and Boston Blackie and so many other people, too. And the photos in that book are great. I mean, we got like 80 photos that were, most of which were never published or very shortly published.
Right.
So, you know, it was great doing that. It only took 7 years for me to write that book because I used to meet with June a couple of times a week and, you know, get some tapes and then having to go through all her photos and everything. But Ken knows, he took the journey with me, didn't you, Ken?
Oh, yes.
It was a journey. Anyway, Ken and Matthias, as always, you guys are the best. And we're going to put another edition of Pop Star Talk in the can, so to speak. So it's been a pleasure having you with us, Matthias and Ken. And what can I say but you are the greatest friends. And to all of your and my listeners, it's my pleasure to bring you the best and brightest personalities on Pop Star Talk, with lots more to come. And of course, let's, you know, make it so my wish to you, as always. And I close all my shows this way, whether it's radio or television. Live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, please dare to dream.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.